May 4th, 2007.
Coming up on Novell Open Audio, we have Moyz Kahari talking to us about SUSE Linux Enterprise Real-Time, and Dale Olds gives us an update on the Bandic project. Next on Novell Open Audio. Welcome to Novell Open Audio, the podcast that connects the Novell user community with what's going on inside and around the Novell universe. I'm your host, Aaron Quill.
I'm Caitlin Jans. And we've got the guys from News from Support here.
He's Randy Goddard.
And he's David Mayer.
Excellent. So Caitlin and I had a chance this week to sit down and talk to Moyz about real-time computing, which I don't know about you, Caitlin, but I actually thought stuff was pretty cool.
I hadn't actually heard a lot about it before, so I learned a truckload and I was super impressed.
Yeah, it's pretty exciting stuff. Really lets you get into Linux and really just, as Moyz describes it, you have just knobs and toggles on everything inside the whole OS and the kernel to really fine-tune performance so that you can just get guaranteed response for specific applications.
I was actually thinking it would be kind of almost nice to use to troubleshoot other applications and environments as well.
Absolutely, because you get a pointer or an alert based on
anything that happens. If you're having timing issues or something like that with another type of application, you could potentially put this on there and you could monitor it to that granularity and depth and figure out exactly what's going on.
Yeah, so let's go ahead and roll the interview and listen to what Moyz has to say. Hi, today in the studio, Caitlin and I have, via a cell phone on the way to the airport, Moyz Kahari. Moyz is the VP of Engineering for Strategic Services here at Novell. Moyz, hi, it's great to have you on the phone.
Thanks for having me, guys.
What we'd like to talk to you today is SUSE Linux Enterprise Real-Time Computing, or SLRT. Can you give us a quick overview of what that product does?
Absolutely. If you look at our core product base today, such as SLES, SUSE Linux Enterprise Server, the product is really designed for general purpose computing, so that this is where server computing comes in for the most part. However, a very specific vertical within that server market space is real-time computing, where time-sensitive applications, such as trading applications in the financial world, they need very predictable behavior. SUSE Linux Enterprise Real-Time is really designed for those types of applications where low latency and predictability is key in order to be able to appropriately address that market.
So when you're talking about time, you're not talking that the clock on the computer is super accurate. You're really talking about being able to control response time and when you're going to get a response back for a specific task, correct?
That is true. However, the clock on the computer itself also ends up becoming extremely accurate because what we do is we can make sure that the clock jitter that some of the systems will experience, and there are specific regulations like regulation National Market Systems, NMS, in the financial world, where these regulations require that your clock, and especially clock in a clustered environment, does not skew from each other too much. And in order to control that, we can make sure that we take advantage of the real-time system. We get rid of the clock jitter down into the microsecond levels, and we also can make sure that applications and leverage these systems are also really getting predictable behavior from the system.
Okay. Can you kind of give us an example of where and how people are using this today?
Certainly, one key area of interest and deployments for our group today is really in the financial services space. So when you have feeds that are coming in from different exchanges like NASDAQ or NYSE, these feeds come into the different financial services companies, and I'm not sure if we can name too many of them, but when these feeds come in, there are these feed handlers that are running on servers at the financial services companies, and these servers, they take in the feed, they do certain calculations to understand what instruments are moving, such as Intel or Microsoft or Novell are moving up or down, and then they have these automated trading applications that sit on these servers, and these trading applications basically tell the financial services company when they should be buying, selling, executing orders against whatever real-time events are occurring in the market space. So this is exactly what where we're being leveraged today very highly.
Okay, and how is that better with SUSE Linux Enterprise real-time rather than just running it on top of SLES?
So the predictability or the behavior for these feed handlers as these feeds come in really is the key here, right? So when a specific feed comes in, let's say Microsoft is moving, you know, there's a difference of a few cents in the next trade that occurs, how quickly can the feed handler recognize that that trade occurred? And, you know, can it predictably respond to those market conditions and make sure that your execution goes through within microseconds is where, you know, the SUSE Linux Enterprise real-time version comes in. For instance, Goldman Sachs had said publicly that for every 1 millisecond advantage, which is 1,000th of a second advantage, they really make over $100 million a year from that particular advantage. So, you know, when we talk about microsecond level advantage for these types of applications, there is a real business case why they need their applications to respond in a predictable fashion.
So is there some kind of specific hardware that this needs to run on, or is it just purely changes in the operating system to make it more efficient?
So for the most part, this is all commercial off-the-shelf components, and that's exactly what we run on. So Intel-based x86 hardware is what SLERT is certified on, both 32-bit and 64-bit environments. You know, in certain cases, we may certify specific pieces of hardware to make sure that if there are, you know, BIOS-level changes that need to occur to make sure that the BIOS isn't really holding the system for long periods of time, then we do that type of certification. So one such certification, when you're using these types of real-time systems in, let's say, the defense industry, in those types of situations, they really would like you to certify specific hardware stacks along with the software stack that sits on top of the operating system, so that when you say that you have predictable behavior built into the environment, it permeates the entire system, all the way from the application operating system all the way down to the hardware.
Okay, so what you're really talking about is real-time allows you to go in and kind of fine-tune the operating system so that you can really control what kind of response and how quick you're going to get a response back for a specific type of call that you're looking for as such, correct?
Yes. So you can certainly think about the real-time system as providing you a whole bunch of more knobs that you can then turn to tune your environment. And by that, what we mean is that you can identify specific applications, such as, let's say, a feed handler, that is absolutely critical for your environment. So that feed handler, as it executes on a normal system, like, let's say, a SLED system or a REL system for that matter, it can be preempted by system-level activity or other processes in the system that are running. And, you know, the feed handler, while it needs the CPU, may or may not get that CPU. On the real-time system, we can pretty much dedicate all and any environment variable that it requires, such as we can direct interrupts directly to the CPU that is going to run the feed handler. We can make sure that an entire CPU is dedicated to the feed handler. We have made changes into the scheduler where the scheduler will respect the prioritization of different processes running on that CPU much more so and in a much more predictable fashion than it would happen on a non-real-time system.
So if you were going ahead and you were implementing this and you were trying to fine-tune the system for what you needed, are there some kind of utilities that you can use and monitor to see that you're actually tuning things to the best ability? I'm assuming it may take you a couple times of tuning to get it really good.
Yeah, it certainly does. We have at our disposal a whole bunch of open source tools that we normally end up using. And along with these open source tools, what we've also done is the kernel has many, many, many hundreds of trace points throughout the kernel. So what that allows us to do is we can trace at a microsecond level granularity exactly what's going on in the environment and see how long a specific page fault took or how long a system call took to execute. And then all of these tools that I mentioned, they're just part of Slurm and they're open source. And then on top of these tools, what we also have are some tools that we, you know, our partner organization, Concurrent Computers, provides. These are proprietary tools that are enabled on top of our platform that allows you to really take the whole tuning to a different level. Very impressive tools.
So if you are going to have to contact support because you're trying to work something out, do these tools allow you to output information so that we can help from a support perspective with working with the customers?
Yes, it does. We do actually, we ship SUSE Linux Enterprise real time with three different kernels. And these three different kernels, one is a production kernel, and one is a trace kernel, and the third one is a trace plus debug kernel. And depending on the environment you're running in, meaning the production kernel has no overhead whatsoever. However, if you're trying to debug issues in your environment, you may decide that you should run the trace kernel, which introduces a small amount of overhead, less than 1%. But with that overhead, what you end up getting is much higher levels of visibility into the entire environment, so you can really tell and tune the system to the best of your ability.
That sounds pretty cool.
I mean, if you look at what we've done with this technology, we really targeted our clients in the financial services space. And these are the clients who led us to develop the technology. So it wasn't that we decided that we would like to develop this technology and go back to the clients and try to sell it to them. We were actually forced to work on this technology by some very key clients. And that's exactly where the deployments are occurring. And we've been doing this for almost 18 months now. However, given the very nature of the financial services world where these are very visible accounts, the activity that we started approximately 18 months ago, that has really snowballed. And if you look over the last 18 months, the Linux kernel itself has really started to accept all types of real-time changes, and all types of our competitors are now stepping into the market and announcing future products that are going to be real-time based.
If a customer wants to get more information or they perhaps wanted to try this out, can they download it as a trial version?
So we certainly do allow our clients or potential clients to download it. The way to do that is that they normally end up engaging with their client executives who service these firms, and they ask those client executives to get them the versions of the operating system that they're looking to test with. And then we can track and make sure that we can provide them all the appropriate help and assistance that's necessary to tune that environment.
Okay.
So I've got another question for you, Moyes. I had a friend kind of do a brain dump to me on Slurm so that he could explain it to me. And one of the neat things that he was telling me about is your ability to insert code into existing applications. Can you talk about that for a second?
Yeah, so that tracing capability that I spoke of earlier, which allows you to really look at exactly what's going on in the kernel and, you know, give you microsecond level granularity as to what's happening, that same capability is also available at user level, where we can insert trace points inside a user application so that as execution occurs around that user application, we can tell exactly what that user application is doing and how much time it's spending in different areas. So by doing that, we can really identify bottlenecks in a way that is really not available with any normal kernel.
Okay, and as well as identifying the bottlenecks, can't you use that kind of as a trigger to kick off an additional piece of code?
Certainly, again, what Slurm ends up providing you is a whole bunch of knobs and tuning capabilities that just aren't available elsewhere. And how you leverage that is entirely up to you. So that what you're saying is, you know, if can I set up profile-based execution of different components of my code based on what I see, you know, my application doing running on top of Slurm? And to that fact, absolutely you can. And one area of extreme interest for our company and some of our team is to really make the integration effort occur around our Zen orchestration suite along with the real-time kernel and the capabilities that it provides so that, you know, we can set up different types of profiles and we can really execute and respond to changing market conditions as they are occurring.
Oh, cool. So based on events, I can kick something off or do whatever I need to.
Yeah, certainly one easy example of that may be that we find out that the market is spiking and, you know, all of a sudden there's a lot of movement occurring and that system utilization on this particular server has gone from, let's say, 20% to almost 100%. Well, given those types of activities, what Orchestrator can help us do is automatically go out and provision three other systems and kick off feed handlers on those systems. So now you are able to handle that type of spike. And you can imagine all types of other scenarios, even outside the financial services world, where these types of things may be useful.
Yeah, so we can spin up additional processors and additional dedicated boxes all based on bandwidth or process utilization or something that's going on within that box.
Right, absolutely. Or think about, you know, kicking off, you know, certain databases that are going to respond to, you know, transactions that are occurring, you know, move those databases over to bigger machines so that you can actually do live migration of different types of applications based on market conditions. So now you're actually taking advantage of all the virtualization work that our company is doing today, and you're taking advantage of that virtualization work based on real events that are occurring in your environment and responding to those events in a predictable fashion.
So I have just one other question. I have a friend of mine who's a reseller, and he was telling me he'd been listening to our open audio stuff. And he's one of the questions that he really always wants to know the answer to is, how much does it cost? You know, he thinks he could be able to pitch these products to his customers, but he doesn't really have an idea of how much it would cost and what the cost benefit would be.
Right. So at the moment, Slurt is priced at $2,500 a server. That pricing is very in line with some of the other Linux offerings from other Linux vendors. You know, their enterprise offerings that do not offer real-time services are in that same range. As we move forward and the real-time technology permeates the kernel and the offerings themselves, I'm sure that the prices will change. And, you know, we do certainly offer, you know, depending on the clients that we're working with, you know, they have different types of MLAs already in place that Slurt would fall under.
So I have another question. Was this developed over in Germany or was this developed here? I'm just thinking from a support perspective, if I had to actually go and work with development and with the kernel developers, would I go here or who would I be likely to approach?
So our team is, you know, a virtual team, so we have many different folks who helped with this particular product that are in Germany. However, the product itself was developed here in the U.S. That most of my team today is in the U.S. I do have a bunch of people in Germany that work very closely with us. Plus, the entire SUSE kernel team is really key here, where, you know, it is a very specific kernel, and we do leverage their expertise, you know, all the time.
Oh,
so
that sounds,
it's really a joint effort.
That sounds really good. That sounds like a great interaction between the different countries and the different developers.
It certainly follows the open source development model, if you will, which is really, you know, we're a virtual team. We're all over the world.
Great. Hey, Mois, thanks a lot for joining us today and giving us an overview of SUSE Linux Enterprise Real-Time.
Thank you very much for the opportunity.
All right, take care.
So, Randy, I hear that you and Aaron had a chat to Dale Olds from the Bandit Project.
That we did. A very, very good interview with Dale. He was very clear and concise explaining how the Bandit Project works, and here it comes.
Today in the Novell Open Audio Studio, Randy and I have Dale Olds, a distinguished engineer, coming back to talk to us again about the Bandit Project. Dale, how's it going?
Good.
Randy, say hello.
Hello. It's nice to be here.
Dale, what we're looking for is we want to get an update. You've done quite a few things on Bandit recently. We'd like to hear what's going on with the project, where it's moving, and some of the cool demos you've shown recently. But before we even get into that, Can you just give us a quick overview of what Bandit is?
Always a good question. I'd be glad to. There's been huge amount of activity lately, and I think it fits very well that we're getting to the point of what Bandit really is and where it's going. Bandit is an open source project developing identity components, especially with an enterprise focus. What we really want to get to is the kind of things that an enterprise needs, especially in an interoperable fashion. When you get to something like the lowest level of identity systems, interoperability is a key aspect of that, and open source, I believe, is the best way of developing them. But enterprises care about things like authorization and auditing, the kind of things that, at least in the business unit that I work in, sets a foundation to be able to sell more of identity management products, things like Access Manager, Sentinel, Novell's Identity Manager product. But you need the little glue pieces, the pieces that make identity systems work. Things like I have a web application and I want to be able to accept an authentication request from an identity that exists somewhere else, and I want to be able to audit what that user did. Bandit provides open source components to make that easy to do. One of the difficulties in the Bandit project, we've been working on it for about a year now, one of the main difficulties we've found is that the lowest level identity components have not been consistently there enough for us to build the components that we want to build. We want to specialize on enterprise capabilities, but there just hasn't been enough of the lower level distributed identity fabric there. There's all these new internet identity systems like OpenID coming along. There's also Microsoft's information card systems, and their implementation of it is called CardSpace. So a lot of what we do is contribute to those efforts. We work with the Higgins Project, which is another open source project that works on very low-level components. We work a lot recently with a project called the Pamela Project that focuses on plugins to things like PHP systems like Joomla and WordPress to be able to accept authentication requests from some of these newer identity systems.
So the idea being, if I'm a company and I'm developing some sort of web services application or something even with that's going to be used within my company, just make it easy to use people's existing identities and also be able to go back and audit those things.
Right.
And
most of these systems involve distributed – most of the newer identity internet identity systems involve distributed identity systems. So to get to exactly your point, there's usually an identity provider service that is the source of identity information. There's often a database or a directory service underneath it.
Okay, so that would be like eDirectory, Active Directory,
yeah,
something like that.
Something like that, that there is a source of identity information. And then there's a client component. It's usually called either Microsoft tends to call it an identity selector, or the Higgins Project calls it an identity agent. There's a piece that runs on the user's machines that allows the user to select what identity information is going to be released. Often browser-based. And then there's websites, web services, or network services that consume the identity information, often called a relying party or a service provider. The significant thing about this overall view of this three-legged stool of these three major components is that it is separating the identity information from the identity-consuming service and putting the user in the middle. It's often called user-centric identity systems. So it also relieves the relying parties, the service providers, from having to maintain databases of users and user account management systems and all of this stuff. So a lot of what the Bandit Project has been doing this last year has been contributing to other projects to try to bring these systems along enough that that foundation is there. Some of the major events this last year has been that Microsoft has released their implementation of a WS Star-based system called CardSpace. The overall metaphor is called information cards. And they've also released an open specification promise, which made it viable for us to implement that in pure open source. The promise was actually made before the Novell-Microsoft deal was announced, and everything that the Bandit Project does is completely open source in conjunction with implementing things that are specified in the open specification promise. So what we've done is, within the last few months, been able to actually demonstrate a completely working system in 100% open source that is compatible with Microsoft's CardSpace, but we can also do it completely open source. We have the Bandit team has implemented an identity selector service called an identity agent and contributed to the Higgins project. And at BrainShare, we demonstrated it for the first time.
Yeah, let's actually talk about what you demoed at BrainShare, because it was pretty cool.
It was a demo that involved actually going beyond card space in some aspects, because it meant that we could consume an identity that was from an open identity provider, or open ID identity provider, and generate a card from it and use that to access a card space enabled shopping site. So what that means to the user is, I don't have to type in username, password at a shopping site. I go to the shopping site, it clicks up a UI in front of me that says select a card that you want to give identity information to this site as. I select my OpenID card. I know that they're just going to get my name and shipping address. And I now have access to a shopping site. That shopping site, or that demo initially was shown on a Mac, which is the first time that had been available on a native identity selector to be able to do that. And then during the demo, Barbara Amin gave the demo. Then Barbara walked to the next site and the next machine and then logged in on a Linux machine, accessed his same card, and got access to the same shopping site. But then what was particularly significant about that was when it came to checkout, OpenID is not known as being particularly secure. I wouldn't want to give my – it's very simple and it's very good at what it does, but I wouldn't want to be giving my credit card information from an OpenID authentication. So what he did was he used a Bluetooth device, which happened to be a cell phone, and used our identity selector to select a different card, which was a secure card off of his cell phone accessed via Bluetooth that had his payment information that then was then given to the website. So it used the overall card space compatible system, but in a way that has already gone beyond what Microsoft can do in their card space implementation.
I've got a quick question on that. In the example you were just giving about what Barbara did by pulling the identity off of his cell phone, was it a separate identity that somewhere back on a back-end store had his credit card information, or actually in the identity that was stored on the cell phone pulled out the credit card information and then sent it over to the merchant site?
An excellent point that how these systems actually work, particularly the information cards metaphor and system, is that the cards don't store the data themselves. They store the pointers, very similar to actual credit cards where you have a name and a credit card number on there, but Visa's got to actually authorize the transaction if it's a
right.
Visa card. It's very similar that in the information card system, you get the card off of the device, and it is significant what is in that information, but it's not actually the authorizing the credit card transaction. What happens is the identity agent contacts the what's called a security token service, a portion of the identity provider, and is going to fill in a token that is then going to be encrypted for the particular relying party. In this case, the shopping site, and then the transfer is going to be happening that way. So it's very secure, but there is an element of contact to the identity provider whenever the card is used.
Very cool.
It sounds almost like an extension of sort of a Kerberos authentication mechanism.
Well, there is some similar concepts to how Kerberos and tokens work in the rough end of the overall system, but the information card system is much more about transferring of what's called claims, very similar to the directory concept of an attribute.
Okay.
That you're transferring sets of information around that is contained in the card. So it's not just an authentication system. It also is shipping address, et cetera.
Additional information.
Yeah.
I didn't mean to bring up that three-headed dog as we would –
Well, the mascot of the Bandit Project is a dog, but it's a friendly dog. It's not the three-headed dog of Kerberos.
Exactly. Hey, you recently just got back from Las Vegas, too. What were you doing down there?
Many, many years ago, I had a little bit of contact with a company in Arizona called NetPro. And very funny how this small world works. I was referred to a blog entry by one of the executives, Gil Kirkpatrick of NetPro. And the blog entry referred to the BrainShare demo and said how cool this was that the Bandit team was showing the Higgins identity agent at BrainShare. And I hadn't had contact with Gil for probably 15 years. But times have changed a lot. NetPro specializes right now in Active Directory administration. They put on a conference called the Directory Experts Conference in Las Vegas. So I contacted Gil and asked him if he'd like me to show up at the conference, and he said yes, he would. And so we kind of reestablished that acquaintance. And at the same time, another project that we worked with that I mentioned earlier called the Pamela Project was putting up a website to try to promote use of CardSpace, actually, as part of the conference, putting up a card issuer identity provider and a relying party site. And Pam was looking for some code to implement some of those features, and the Bandit Project happened to have some. So we worked with Pam to use Bandit code and Higgins code to put up an identity provider service that would issue information cards, what's called managed information cards, to the conference attendees. Even though we didn't have any presentations down there, we did have a fairly interesting, significant presence, because the point of the issuing the cards was so that conference attendees could access a site so that they could see pictures of themselves taken with a man in a chicken suit.
I'm sorry you lost me for a minute. My mind was kind of wandering, and I heard pictures of yourself with a man in a chicken suit?
It's a long story. Apparently, it's a tradition of the Directory Experts Conference for a man to attend the conference in a chicken suit.
Same guy every year?
I don't know that. I don't know. I think it is, actually. I think
you'd have to look under the chicken suit to see him.
I don't know. I did see him. I actually took some pictures, too. There's a man in a chicken suit that attends the conference, and this year they wanted to put up a site that would have, and this was Pam and Gil's idea to put together this motivational service, that what they would do is take pictures of people with the guy in the chicken suit, hopefully as embarrassing as possible. And then they would put them up on a website. But to access the website, you had to use an information card. You had to use a managed information card from an identity provider service to be able to see the site. And then you could vote on the pictures to see, kind of a hot or not kind of concept. Vote on the pictures to see which was the most humiliating picture. And the one who had the picture that received the most votes won a Microsoft Zune. I mean, this was, after all, a joint Microsoft conference. So I found the whole experience, it was a lot of work getting the IDP to actually work, but the whole experience was very interesting, and starting to actually see how some of these concepts work in real life was very useful. And people can be motivated by fear or motivated by
humiliation,
by fear and humiliation, or by trying to win something.
Or men in chicken suits.
Or men in chicken suits. So the site actually worked. It was particularly gratifying to me to work with the Microsoft folks that were there, were very supportive. The NetPro folks were very supportive. Pam was kind of the focal point of that particular exercise. And in her session that I attended, I also liked it that there was specific questions people from a Microsoft-oriented conference, a group of Active Directory experts, asking about CardSpace, wanted to know whether it was available in open source, and we could show them that the conference itself site was run on 100% open source software. Provided largely from the Bandit and Higgins projects.
So wait a minute. At a site that was primarily about Microsoft and Active Directory, you ran the back-end card services on open source stuff?
100% open source. It was actually an Ubuntu server. But on top of that was a bunch of Bandit code, a bunch of Higgins code. On the Relying Party side, it was all PHP and Joomla. So it was 100% open source code on both the identity provider and the identity consumer. At that particular conference, I assume all of the identity agent interactions, the actual cards, came from Microsoft machines, because that's what everybody ran there. But we're working on that as well.
Excellent.
Cool. So next for the Bandit Project is take the identity provider code, similar to what we did for the famous Hot or Not. Maybe we should call this product Chicken or something. I don't know. We need to put it together into a more easily installable package. We've got a long way to go for that. But the idea is to make a very simple to deploy identity provider. The identity agent is one of the most significant things we've done in a long time. In fact, Pat Felstead, the co-leader of the Bandit Project, is at Microsoft's Mix conference this week, and just yesterday showed with the Microsoft – execs showed a demonstration of the open source identity agent running there.
Wow. I'm sorry, what's Microsoft Mix?
It's a web developer conference in Las Vegas. I don't know why they call it Mix, but it's a web developer conference in Las Vegas. Then we've got I'm going to be on a panel in Munich, and then an Internet Identity Workshop. So lots of events coming up. But the main thing that is showing progress from the Bandit team is the use of a open source identity agent, the Higgins Identity Agent, and the use of the Bandit Identity Provider Service, and hooking it up into real deployments, even if it involves men in chicken suits.
So a question with regards to the overall picture of Bandit. Is it meant, is the intent to be more of a modular or a buffet-style type ID management on the back end, meaning an enterprise could come in and say, we need these particular pieces to fit in with this model, or is it meant as an all-encompassing type model?
That's an excellent question. During the development of Bandit, we've always seen it as Lego pieces, as glue, as components that we want to make it that's easy to consume, that provide these services for people. Good example there is a component that we do called a role calculation engine, that you can just take this chunk of code, put it into your application server, and configure some XML, and it can take identity information from any LDAP directory or other data source, apply these transformation rules to it, and determine some pretty sophisticated role capabilities like temporal constraints and dynamic exclusion of roles and these kinds of things.
Wow.
So it's a very useful chunk of code, but it's a Lego piece of Lego that you inject into an existing system. What we found over the last year is that while all of those pieces are very important and we want to continue those and make them easily consumable, we also need to kind of package them up into reference applications. So that's what for example, the identity provider package that I've been mentioning that needs. It's somewhat operational, but it needs a lot more work. Is we want it to be a one-touch install that you can do something like go to OpenSUSE and say, install this package, all the dependencies are managed for you, and you have an existing identity provider. So we need to provide those, and we're making some of those packages. The main areas that we will focus on is the identity provider service and the identity agent service to make those easily installed and consumed. But ultimately, those are reference applications to get to the components that we want developers to be easy,
okay,
to be able to consume. So
excellent.
I know that wasn't a very straightforward answer, but that's the overall picture of how we do it.
So there is code available for people to go take a look at now and start to crank on, right?
Yes.
And what is the site?
Bandit-project.org.
Okay.
Is the main project site. Welcome all comers. Welcome all people that want to get involved, whether that's using it, whether that's contributing code. Everything that we do is open source. IRC channels, mailing lists, et cetera, are all available from the main project site.
And that's one thing we like to talk about whenever we have an open source project in the studio, and that is, where can you use help? Since it's open source, you know, we want other people to contribute. I know, you know, we're always looking for help on the development side, but people always overlook the other things that they can do. We can always use things like graphic designers to help make the site look better. We can use people to help straighten out the wiki, help people to, you know, just do things as simple as clean up people's English, clean up spelling mistakes.
Translate.
Translate's a great thing we can use.
Well, I think from a Bandit perspective, I personally find the site needs work. It needs to be our messaging needs to be more simple and more clear of what we're trying to produce. So I would love any help we can get on that. Also, I believe we're to the point of that we just need people to start using the software and figuring out how to apply it back to the chicken site, figuring out how to apply it in real uses. I think we are to the point. I don't think we're to the point to, you know, commercial deployments yet, but we are learning a lot about usability of the overall system by actually using it in these kind of demo capabilities. I think we are to the point where people can download it, start deploying it, start playing with it, and telling us what needs to be fixed.
Yeah, give us feedback so that we can make it better and make sure that it's easy for other people to consume. Great. Well, Dale, thanks a lot for swinging by the studio.
It's my pleasure. Great stuff.
That's great. Dale gave us a good update on Bandit. We'll post links up on the website so that you can actually see the demo that Dale did at Brainshare. Remember that Novell Open Audio is brought to you by Novell Users International in conjunction with Novell Incorporated. Remember that most of our content is influenced by our listener community. You can give comments and suggestions directly to our site at www.novell.com/openaudio or send us email at openaudio@novell.com. That's it for this time. See you next time.